to the UK, to the Essex coast, to speak with Oliver Walkie. Oliver is from A Glass of Bubbly. Good morning or good evening, Oliver. How are you?
Good morning, good evening. Thank you for having me on, Jill.
Absolute pleasure. What time is it over there?
It is 11:08.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. We'll get you to bed soon. Do at least have a glass of wine with you, because you would absolutely be allowed to.
Unfortunately not. There's a bottle in the fridge, but I'm going to stay here. I won't run away.
Okay, there we go. So we love champagne and sparkling. We all do. And love it from all over the world. Look at Anne, who's paneling here. She's just sitting there going, yup, any time of day. So why don't you start with telling us your story of where your love for champagne and sparkling came from, and what it was that actually influenced you to start A Glass of Bubbly and go down that path.
Well, that journey begins about 10, 12 years ago when my parents founded Glass of Bubbly. It came from, my dad was an entrepreneur, and he used to be very, very online social wise. So when he was buying domain names, my mum bought the name Glass of Bubbly, which was available. And it sat on the sidelines for about 2 years. And then my father went to a tasting event, and he saw a gap in the market for bringing champagne and Prosecco together. So over the years, we grew into now the largest dedicated sparkling wine website in the world. We have an internationally recognized awards and London's biggest trade and press tasting.
Wow. Okay. That is very, very impressive. So just for the listeners, it's glassofbubbly.com. Simple as that, glassofbubbly.com. So that was your parents who started. I find that interesting that they see that there's a gap in the market, and that is that people hadn't been bringing champagne and Prosecco together. Do you think that's because they were and maybe still are considered such extremely different varietals and different drinks, despite them being drunk at relatively similar occasions? Or simples, yeah, you know what I mean?
Well, back when Glass of Bubbly was founded, I remember my father telling me the story of he went to a tasting event, and you dare not say Prosecco at this champagne tasting.
Sacrilege.
Exactly. But when you go to the supermarket, they're both on the same shelf. So why can't they be on the same platform in the same magazine, right next to each other in the same picture?
Look, sure. And they come from the same foundations that, you know, certain Prosecco can only be Prosecco from certain DSCG. And I guess the main difference, apart from, you know, a one-time fermentation as opposed to two, is the cost, Oliver. It's the extreme difference in price. So how have they bridged that gap? Or, well, it's probably not a gap that needs to be bridged, but how have they dealt with that?
Well, I think now controls 50% of the sparkling market in the UK, something like that. Mm-hmm. And obviously they are two different prices, and champagne is not going to lower its price to compete with Prosecco. Champagne has embodied itself into celebratory moments, into birthdays, weddings. It's a special moment when you open a bottle of champagne. Mm. For Prosecco, it can be in everybody's weekly shop. It's a cheap but still very enjoyable glass of bubbly.
Yes. Yep, absolutely. And later on, we will go into favourites of yours, if you can divulge. But you do a lot of interviewing of sommeliers and people for different tasting notes, etc. So, you approached me to get some tasting notes on vintage champagne, because I was able to do the Paul Yorg, etc. I think that might have been the 2012, was it, that I gave you? 2014. Either way, I was intrigued as to why do you want these notes? You know, where are you going to be using them, etc. So, can you explain, you know, what your purpose of gathering all this information is for, and where it can be found?
Yes, perfectly. So last year, my father and I created a company called Champagne Collectors. Mm-hmm. The sole focus of that company is to highlight and promote vintage champagnes to people who are passionate about enjoying them. We know that vintage champagnes at the moment are very in the sort of buying and trading market, and the prices of those vintages are going up because of the investing in them. So this platform is very much, if you pop open a bottle of vintage champagne, there are over hundreds of different reviews from the different vintages, from different professionals within the industry, detailing. So we're sort of creating a database of champagne tasting notes, but that are reliable to use from industry professionals, as I said. And there's also the opportunity to sell your vintage champagne if perhaps you've been left a bottle and you're perhaps not a biggest bubbly drinker, you prefer gin or beer, you can pass it on to someone who is going to appreciate it and enjoy it. Champagne Collectors is all about appreciating vintage champagnes at the perfect time with the right people.
Right, okay, no, I love it. Well then, can I ask you, do you have some specific favorites?
That's a tough question.
It is.
For champagne, one of my favorites is Champagne Roger Brun. Mm-hmm. The guy who runs it, Philip Brun. I've been to his place in A Champagne a few times. He's an incredible character, and he produces some incredible champagnes. His 2004 was a remarkable year for him. For English sparkling wines, I would normally go to Fox & Fox. Standard is always above the majority surrounding them. And for something like Prosecco, there's a lot of different houses, but maybe Villa Sandy or Montalvini, Bizzol are brilliant producers with a great range.
Yes, yeah. So the English sparkling, I'm so fascinated with this, between the champagne and the English sparkling. And I've had a fair few different types of English sparkling, and I think they're great. I think they're beautiful. And they are different, obviously, but the price point is still so similar. So it's the absolute opposite of the champagne and Prosecco. It is so similar. And, you know, we've spoken about it on the show before, you know, I think people are quite happy to pay a lot of money for champagne, especially a vintage champagne, because for millennia, it feels like, you know, hundreds of years, we've known these names and these brands. Whereas the English sparkling movement is, for most consumers, it's still relatively new. So justifying paying the same amount for a beautiful English sparkling as a very well-known champagne house and champagne, it must be a tough marketing click. Now, this is, you must be like all over this and see it all the time. I'd be really intrigued to see your take on the differences and the things that people ask you about them as to, you know, is it worth investing that sort of money into English sparkling when I could for the same amount into French champagne?
I think in the UK, we're very supportive of local homegrown sort of products. So when it's made in England and it's English sparkling wine, people like to buy English if you're in England, sort of thing.
Yes.
So there's a great support from the local community surrounding these wineries who are willing to pay that bit extra, the same price as champagne, to experience something that they then learn is made in the same method. It's maybe not aged as long. We don't have that vast history as compared to champagne, and that's going to develop over time. But I think it's got a lot to do with just supporting local businesses, especially after lockdown and COVID, and a lot of businesses suffered. People just want to help rebuild our British entrepreneurship businesses.
Sure. Do you think Brexit could have featured anywhere in that as well?
I think so, yes. It's made getting sparkling wines into the UK a lot harder. So it definitely does help with buying English.
Yeah. So we've actually had on the show today a couple of people talking about different events over in the UK. You certainly are, considering you're a country that isn't specifically known for being wine producers, let's be honest, you know, you do host a lot of events about wine. Why do you think that is?
Well, we are in the UK. We love drinking sparkling wine. I think America's number one, and we're number two now for drinking sparkling wine. So it is a very competitive market. We're very new to producing sparkling wines, and they're going to be seen more on the shelves. But when it comes to champagne, they need to be in the UK because they get a lot of sales through UK consumers. Prosecco, they want to be in the UK and other sparkling wine regions as well, like Slovenia, Croatia, the Czech Republic. They want to get into the UK because they know it is a big market if they can tap into it and find a niche to slot into. But as I said, it is very competitive. So there are constantly tasting events on in London. Almost every day you can find yourself at a tasting event, discovering new sparkling wines or still wines as well from all over the world that want to find representation, distribution, find their way into restaurants, hotels. It's just ingrained into people's minds that the UK, and especially London, is the place to be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you see many Australian wines over there at all? I mean, I can't imagine you'd see a lot. Probably know the brands that you would, but do you drink them? Do you know people who would purposely go and pick up an Aussie wine, an Aussie Shiraz, for example, or an Australian Chardonnay?
We've enjoyed a few. Australia definitely creates some very nice bubbly, but I assume, like with many countries, the best stuff actually doesn't leave the country. And the best stuff, if you want to enjoy it, you have to travel to Australia to go to the wineries to taste it yourself. I think it's
that was a very diplomatic answer, by the way. That was so diplomatic.
Thank you. I think still wines from Australia are more popular than sparkling at the moment. It's growing. There's definitely a place for it, but I think there's still some work to be done.
Okay, so I don't know if you've heard of House of Arras. House of Arras. So this is something I think I'd love you to try and look into. So Tasmania is probably renowned as our state that produces that's the most beautiful sparkling wines. Ed Carr, who's a big fan of the show, friend of the show, he's the genius behind a brand called House of Arras. And that's just one of many brilliant sparkling houses in Australia and specifically in Tasmania. And he's really helped, he and others have really helped put Australia on the global map for sparklings, which, as you say, we were known for our Shiraz and a lot of the other wines, Semillons, et cetera, not sparkling. So I'd love you to try them. You know, they're absolutely magnificent. And I get your point of being local, having them at cellar door, everything always tastes better then. But we really do produce world-class to the point that actually Ed Carr has won, I think, multiple times best sparkling winemaker in the world, judged by the French and Champagne. So it's something just to look into. I'll email you some details because I think I'd really be interested to see if you can get your hands on a bottle and to see what you think. Like when you're talking about like a House of Arras Grand Vintage or their beautiful Blanc de Blanc in 2014, the Grand Vintage 09, those sort of things, I'd be really intrigued to see what you think. So I think they stand up there with the best of. Of course, you know, being Australian, but we're all a little proud and patriotic, as we should be. But that's just a little opening for you. But it is a very interesting, it's an interesting topic anyway, that, you know, sparkling wine, see America, the largest consumers of it, the UK, Australia's very big on bubbles as well. But, you know, world renowned it really is. It's, you know, it's the celebrations, but these days it's not just waiting for a special occasion. It's just having as a lovely aperitif before a meal, or, you know, you seem to be having oysters or whatever it is. People are, you know, popping over open a bubbly far more often than they used to, which is wonderful for you guys. It's wonderful for all the producers. And I think that they're also learning a lot more about the differences between them and really being able to see the characteristics of where they are from, which of course is very important. And people are beginning to take, I guess, pay more attention to it. And I guess, you know, trailing it back around to your champagne tasting notes, how do you think that really influences someone's decision to buy something? If we're not talking, you know, investment and, you know, high net worth people who are, you know, buying very expensive ones, let's talk the ordinary drinker, but who really appreciates bubbles. Do you think that getting tasting notes would actually influence their decision? Do you think it's price? Do you think it is locale? What do you think it is?
It's a very complex question.
Sorry, it is.
for champagne collectors, the main focus of it is more of the vintages pre-2000. Mm-hmm. So stuff that perhaps is non-disgorged, that's still in the cellar. It's the stuff from the 70s, 80s, 90s. The kind of experiences that you don't always get to taste. It's more maybe once in a lifetime, twice in a lifetime. So reading some of the tasting notes on that, it will influence some people. If I read, I prefer, for my opinion, I enjoy like oaky, toasty sort of sparkling wine, champagne. So if I see that in a tasting note, then I'm gonna read the rest of it. And if it says something like nutty brioche, then that's my kind of more of a champagne. Yes. So I'm more inclined, but of course price point is going to be a consideration. If you're buying stuff from the 70s or 80s, price is probably not going to be a major issue for you. Other than that, I'm not 100% sure. I think I'd need to think about it a bit more and get back to you.
Oh, look, it is a tough question because it's not really something you can ask. I mean, everyone's got different reasons of why they do things. But I do think, you know, the education piece around sparklings and champagnes is certainly becoming a big thing, and people are paying more attention to it. I mean, people what are just wine drinkers generally are paying more attention. They like to know what's in their glass more than just, you know, where it's from or what it pairs well with. And I love seeing that. I really love that from an industry perspective. I think that's awesome. And I'm sure it's pretty much, you know, pretty much everywhere. So I guess before I let you go and actually let you go to sleep, what are some of your favorite food pairings with champagne?
I think it sometimes depends on the occasion, the moments before, who you're with. But some of the best pairings I've had, Lambrusco with pizza.
Uh-huh.
It's wonderful. Nice. But to be fair, I enjoyed that in Lambrusco, in a proper Italian pizza restaurant. So it enhanced sales with great company. For being at home, something like just a normal burger or my mum's homemade chicken pie. Uh-huh. Wonderful pairings.
So something with a bit of fat. I mean, actually, one of my faves, and it was because I think someone mentioned it on the show once, is champagne and Korean fried chicken. It's, you know, the fat, the grease, it just works so beautifully together. But the taste, just so anything that has a bit of fat, but then of course you go something like oysters, where you get the salinity and that sort of thing. But it's, I find it quite fun what people are beginning to pair with, you know, rather expensive champagnes these days. They're having a lot of fun with it, and I think that's good to see.
Definitely, like rosés with curry. It's a wonderful pairing to get that spicy kick.
Absolutely, absolutely. So outside of sparkling, so obviously that's what you deal with, just talking very quickly, table wines, do you have some favorite varietals?
Oh, I don't get to explore a lot of still wines. After drinking so many, tasting so many different bubbly, you want something a little still every once in a while.
Yeah.
I would normally go for a red, something like a Shiraz or a Malbec. A nice strong body to it. I always enjoy a good red.
Okay, so you say Shiraz, and obviously that is one of our favorites. Yeah. Australia probably does it best. What Australian Shiraz have you had that you really enjoyed?
To be honest, I can't remember the name. I had one just before Christmas, and it was a lovely, heavy, warming body to it. Nice cherry, chewy characters, but I can't remember the names.
It might have been South Australia, but yeah, we certainly do Yeah, we do make a very good Shiraz all around the country. Well, look, Oliver, thank you so much. This has been a really fun chat and greatly appreciated that you're staying up until near midnight. So we're going to let you go to bed. Thank you very much. Let's keep in touch. I can keep Definitely. Sending you vintage notes and things like that. I think it's a really, I personally find it a fun thing to a fun thing to see. So take care of yourself and do look into this House of Arras. Me.
I will. I'll wait for your email and I'll look
yes.
into it.
Yeah, thank please you do. Much. Thank you so much. That is Oliver Walkie from Glass of Bubbly, all the way over in the UK.